AM and FM, Seattle.
CBS News. Still no let-up in that 12-alarm fire in Philadelphia that is burning in a Gulf oil refinery. I'm Ann Crosman reporting on the CBS Radio Network. A fire is still raging out of control in South Philadelphia at one of the biggest oil refineries on the East Coast. Three firemen have died in the blaze, three more are missing, and at least 12 people have been injured. The fire has closed down the refinery and destroyed a storage tank farm and the company's administrative offices. About an hour ago, a man crossed police lines and told police he was going to start another fire. The man was shot and wounded. The police searched a package he was carrying and found only clothes. More news coming up.
If you ever use a hemorrhoid preparation, you should know this. Vaseline Brands has news. It's Hemorrhoid Ointment. Hemorrhoid works fast, helps protect with a proven medical ingredient for soothing occlusion. And Hemorrhoid gives you only this key ingredient, so it gives you more than the leading preparation. Now at your first sign of pain, burning, and itching, turn to soothing Hemorrhoid. Hemorrhoid from Vaseline Brands. Use only as directed.
The American woman is a business executive, a housewife, an author, a judge, a star athlete. In other words, the American woman is what she wants to be. And on the CBS News broadcast series, The American Woman, we report on and talk to women we're sure you'll find interesting. I'm Sylvia Chase, CBS News, a regular contributor to this series on the achievements and dilemmas of women in today's society. Listen for The American Woman, Monday through Saturday on most of these stations of the CBS radio network.
The two suspects in the Bronfman kidnapping face arraignment Monday morning in New York. CBS News reporter Sam Chu Lin has the story.
New York City firemen Mel Lynch and Dominic Byrne, a Brooklyn limousine operator, have been charged with extortion in the abduction of 21-year-old Samuel Bronfman. Early Sunday morning, FBI agents raided a Brooklyn apartment occupied by Lynch and freed the Seagram Whiskey heir. Lynch was arrested at the scene, and his alleged accomplice, Byrne, was apprehended nearby. The capture of the two suspects and the recovery of $2.3 million in ransom money ended a 9-day investigation by more than 500 FBI agents and local law enforcement officers. Young Bronfman has been pronounced in good condition, but a little tired. The family has gone into seclusion for what is described as a well-deserved rest. Sam Chu Lin, CBS News, New York.
Former Teamsters president James Hoffa is still missing more than 2 weeks after he disappeared from his hometown of Lake Orion, Michigan. Hoffa's wife, Josephine, collapsed from the strain on Sunday. She was taken to a hospital where she is now in stable condition. Mrs. Hoffa has a heart condition. She has not been well in recent years. Secretary of State Kissinger will be packing his bags again soon and leaving on Wednesday for another shuttle diplomacy mission to the Middle East. Kissinger announced on Sunday that he is resuming his effort to try to clinch a second interim peace settlement on the Sinai. Egyptian foreign ministry officials say that's good news. Israeli Foreign Minister Alon says he welcomes Kissinger's visit, but says there still are problems before any agreement can be signed. Typhoon Phyllis is heading toward the Korean Peninsula today after sweeping through part of Japan, leaving at least 12 people dead and 23 missing on the island of Shikoku. Winds up to 120 miles an hour knocked out power in more than 300,000 homes, disrupting ferry, train, and air service. Time magazine says the Soviet Union is interested in buying 11 million tons of grain from the United States over and above the 10 million tons it's already contracted for. According to Time, the U.S. Agriculture Department believes that the current Soviet grain harvest is going to be about 30 million tons less than hoped for. The Soviet purchase of 15 million tons back in 1972 was blamed for a dramatic rise in food prices in the United States. More news coming up.
Hello, everybody. This is Cousin Bruce Morrow for the Foundation Church. Now, these are troubled times. Not a lot of money around. Work's kind of tough to get. Apathy's here. We're disillusioned. Wondering what's going to go down next. Well, it's easy to go along with it, right? I mean, just sit around and say, who cares? You don't let the next guy worry about it. But does it have to be like this? Pride, dignity, truth, being straight with one another. Now, these qualities have not disappeared. They've just gone to sleep for a while, right? But now's the time to wake them up. Only we can do it. This message brought to you by the Foundation Church, 111 East 38th Street, New York, New York, zip 10016.
A congressional delegation that wound up a 13-day trip to China on Sunday says it looks forward to the time when Chinese officials will visit the United States. No current Chinese leader has come to Washington, and none is expected to until the United States ends diplomatic relations with nationalist China. The congressman also said they foresee new chances for more trade and technological exchanges with China. President Ford is getting ready to take a two-day side trip from his vacation chalet in Colorado. Mr. Ford is scheduled to go to Rifle, Colorado on Monday for a tour of an oil shale extraction operation. I'm Ann Crosman, CBS News.
CBS for Seattle, this is KIXI. The weather outlook, cloudy and rather cool with periods of partial clearing and chance of a few showers tonight and tomorrow. Increasing chance of rain tomorrow night and Tuesday. Highs in the low 70s, lows in the mid-50s. And in downtown Seattle currently, it's 64 degrees. The barometer steady at 29.87. And in sports briefly, in the North American Soccer League playoffs in Portland, Portland defeated St. Louis by a score of 1-0. In Major League Baseball activity, in the National League, Cincinnati over Pittsburgh, Philadelphia down San Diego, St. Louis beat Atlanta, New York down San Francisco, Los Angeles over Montreal, Chicago beat Houston. In the American League, Chicago and Boston divided a pair, Baltimore over Texas, Kansas City beat the Yankees, Cleveland down Minnesota, Detroit over California, and Oakland beat Milwaukee.
Radio Mystery Theater presents... I'm E.G. Marshall. We have a drama for you, an adaptation of a story written long ago. A lady by the name of Mary Wollstonecraft, dead now for a century and a quarter, accomplished in her lifetime two things for which she is well remembered. She married the poet Percy Bysshe Shelley, and she composed the novel Frankenstein. The first brought her misery, the second brought her fame. Though she never married another man, she did write other novels and a goodly number of short stories besides. It is one of these we bring you now.
Why tell a tale of impious tempting of providence and soul-subduing humiliation? Why? Answer me, you who are wise in the secrets of human nature. I only know that it is so. And in spite of strong resolve, of a pride that too much masters me, of shame and even of fear, I must speak.
Our mystery drama, The Transformation, was adapted especially for the Mystery Theater by Elspeth Eric and stars Kevin McCarthy. It is sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division and Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, Brewers of Budweiser. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
The following fable is presented to make you want to buy a Buick.
I've never been very good at making decisions. Fortunately, when I was little, I had some help.
He's a boy. We'll take the blue blanket, the blue rattle, and the blue baby buggy with the rubber bumpers.
As I grew older, however, I was increasingly on my own.
Should I wear my snowsuit or my swimsuit? Gee, that's a toughie.
Now today, Decisions still aren't my big strength.
May I have your signature, Mr. Seymour?
Shall I use a pencil, a pen, a crayon, a mantle? Well, thanks to Buick, I now have real problems. I mean, having heard what a great engine the V6 is, spunky and efficient and all, and knowing that Buick is famous for V6 engines, well, I trotted right down to a Buick dealer. Then I find out that they offer it in three cars. There's Skyhawk, the compact Skylark, and the mid-size Century. And all with the Buick V6. Well, it wasn't easy, but I finally decided. I'll take a Skylark, won't I?
Buick, dedicated to the free spirit in just about everyone.
Here's a tip from your Better Business Bureau on the metric system. You know, the worldwide trend today is toward a universal system of measurement, the metric system. The names of this new system may sound strange to you at first, but fortunately, there are only a few words that have to be learned for everyday use, and these are the millimeter, centimeter, meter, and kilometer for describing length and distance, the milliliter and liter for capacity or volume, the gram, kilogram, and ton for weight, the kilometer per hour for highway speed, and the degree Celsius or centigrade for temperature. You're already using some of these terms more than you may realize. For example, when you go to the supermarket, you see weights expressed in grams on more and more packaged items. Now, for more information on this whole metric system, write to Metric Information Office, National Bureau of Standards, Washington, D.C. The background for our tale of horror is the proud and beautiful city of Genoa, which looks down upon the blue Mediterranean Sea, where the northern coast of Italy curves toward France. It was in Genoa that our hero was born, and on the shore of that sea that his strange adventure, or should we say misadventure, began.
I walked the shore. The waves sounded in my ears. The air was gray and dismal, and above the horizon, black clouds loomed. The scene reflected my own mood, misery and desperation flooding over me, and a crushing sense of my own helplessness. Memories flitting shadow-like through my tortured mind. Memories of days past when I had lived with my father. I was born with, I freely admit it, a most imperious, haughty, and tameless spirit. The words of our confessor, Father Pellegrini, echoed in my head.
Your father seems a tyrant to you, Guido. I know that. But you have no mother, and someone must check the wild impetuosity of your character. You must respect your father's wishes, Guido.
But I did not. The only hope of my rebel heart was to be a man, free, independent, or, in better words, insolent and domineering.
Guido, Guido, what is to become of you?
My father had one friend, a wealthy Genoese noble, the Marchese Torella, who, in a political tumult, was sent for a time into exile. Like my father, he was a widower with one child. A little flower of a child whom he left under my father's guardianship.
You will take care of my precious daughter, will you not, Guido? You're several years her senior. You will be her protector, her defender, will you not?
I had only nodded my head, but my heart had said much more. My heart had given glad shouts that this exquisite child was to be put into my care. Though words would not come to my lips, this little child, this Juliet, had held out her tiny hand and placed it in mine with such simple trust and affection that then and there, I knew I had met my fate.
Guido?
We grew up together, she and I. When I was 11 and Juliet 8 years of age, a cousin of mine, much older than either of us, he seemed to me to be quite a man,
took great notice of my playmate, and one day he called her his bride and asked her to marry him. And when she shrank from him, he insisted and drew her towards him. I had watched the odious scene, and with the emotions of a maniac, I threw myself upon
him.
I strove to draw his sword. Failing in that, I clung to his neck with a ferocious desire to strangle
him. Guido, no!
Boys! Boys! Guido, loosen your hold!
I'm ashamed.
No, don't try to explain. I know the bully was trying to force himself on our little Judith. And I know you had to come to her aid, but Guido, had you not been too small to draw his sword from his scabbard, who knows what you might have done?
Father?
Your actions were a great sin. Come with me to the chapel, and we will pray for your impetuous soul.
This I did, and that very night I returned to that same chapel, holding little Juliet by the hand, and in that holy place, I profaned her child's lips with an oath that she would be mine forever, forever only mine. Those days passed away. After a few years, the Marchesa Torella returned from exile and became wealthier and more prosperous than ever. When I was 17 and Juliet a blossoming 14, my father became gravely ill. As he lay dying, Torella, Juliet, and I stood by his bedside.
I know what you seek of me, my friend. That I will take your son to my heart and into my home. You have my word on that. But there is more. Is there not, my friend? Ah, yes. You wish me to bestow upon your well-loved son the hand of my equally beloved daughter. That is your wish? Is it not, my dear friend?
And so it was done. The beautiful child I had so loved from childhood was promised to me against the day when I should be so situated as to claim her for my wife. And now on the rocky and rain-swept shore, as I walked bent over against the rising wind, the memory of these early feelings returned to mock me, torture me, drive me to a distraction I thought I could not bear. My dreams had vanished. Hope had abandoned me. I had been willing to die there on the shore, to let the rain and the cold congeal my blood and freeze my marrow and end at last a life which had become unbearable. Then all at once, a gigantic flame pierced my eyelids and made me lift my head to look seaward. The spot where I knelt was locked on one side by a rugged promontory. Round this cape suddenly came, driven by the wind, a vessel. In vain the mariners tried to force a path for her to the open sea, but the fierce gale drove her on the rocks. With a frightful shock, the vessel dashed upon her unseen enemy. In a brief space of time, she went to pieces. I covered my face with my hands and wished with all my heart that I could have sunk beneath the waves with those unfortunates. Then, all at once, I looked up. Something was floating towards the shore. Was that a human form? A human being bestriding a sea chest? A fellow creature saved from a watery grave? Was it human? Surely never had such existed before. A misshapen dwarf, I could see it now, with distorted features, a torso as wide as it was long, legs thin as threads and extending an inordinate distance from his body. His arms were the same, and the hands that dangled were tipped with pointed nails that were black all over.
By Saint Beelzebub, I have been well met, and by the beast, here is another ally of the Mighty One. To what saint did you offer prayers, friend, if not to mine?
Now I could see his face. God in heaven, his face. His head sloped back from his eyes so sharply he could be said to have no forehead at all. His hair was black, as were his eyes, but long and growing unevenly over his shriveled pate, and from the backs of his hands, from his legs, and even from between his toes.
What a noise the big ocean makes! The waves disturb me. I will have no more of any of my growing. Silence, winds! To your homes! Crowds! Fly to the Antipodes! And leave our heaven clear!
He stretched out his long, lank arms that looked like spider's claws and seemed to embrace the expanse behind him. Was it a miracle? The clouds became broken and fled. The azure sky first peeped out and then spread a field of blue above us. The sea grew calm.
Come! Don't be frightened, friend. I am good-humored when pleased. And something does please me in your handsome face, though you look a little woebegone. Shall we be friends?
He held out his hand. I could not touch it.
Oh, well, then. Companions. That will do as well. And now, while I rest after the buffeting, tell me why you wander thus alone and downcast on this wild seashore. Have you no home?
I have a home.
Then why are you here?
I dare not go there.
Tell me, is it a woman?
What?
Did she throw you out? Did she betray you with another?
She is the purest, the loveliest, the most faithful. She has done nothing but good, nothing that is not consonant with her noble nature.
Then why in the name of the devil are you here?
At first I could not speak. And then the words started to come, and soon they were flowing in a steady torrent. Before I could marry my Juliet, I must amass a fortune, and before domesticity claimed me, I must see the world, and see it I did. I went to Florence, to Rome, to Naples, and at long last to the bourne of my wishes, to Paris.
Paris!
I was arrogant and self-centered. I loved display, and above all, I threw off all control. I became a spoiled child. Who could control me? Not the letters of Tarela. No, only strong necessity in the shape of an empty purse.
Oh, poor handsome boy.
Acre after acre, estate after estate, I sold. My dress, my jewels, my horses were unrivaled in Paris, while the lands of my inheritance passed into the possession of others.
But go on. I'm caught up in suspense to hear the outcome.
I thought that I would come home to Genoa. I was nearly a beggar, yet I would come home and rebuild my fortunes. I knew the moment I went to claim my bride, the world would know me for what I was. Not only a beggar, but one who had beggared himself, a wastrel, a fool. Knowing myself unfit to marry Juliet, according to the proper precepts of Genoese law and custom, how could I have contemplated such a thing? I abducted her.
Good, brilliant, inspired.
You think so? You think so? I had planned to marry her, carry her off to France, but my plot was discovered. What property I still owned was put in the hands of commissioners to pay at least partially my mountain of debts. Alone, friendless, I came to this shore, and so you see me now. How can you laugh so? How can you? You humiliate me even further.
Do you mean to starve on these rocks and let the birds peck out thy dead eyes, while your betrothed is possessed by another?
What would you have me do?
Revenge thyself, man. Humble thy enemies. Set thy foot on the old man's neck. Possess thyself of his daughter.
Oh, had I gold, much could I achieve, but poor, I am powerless.
You have noticed the sea chest on which I am seated.
It was on that chest that you floated to shore.
I shall now dismount. See? A common sea chest, would you say?
I have seen many such.
Ah, but when I press here, when a spring lurks beneath, see what happens. It flies open. Come, closer. Behold.
I approach the chest. Then, Holy Mother, what a sight met my eyes. Blazing jewels, ruby, diamond, sapphire, emerald, beaming gold, pale silver. I trembled head to foot. A wild passion swept over me to possess this treasure which gleamed and glittered within the chest. I looked helplessly at the hairy monster who stood watching me through half-closed eyes. His look, his very attitude told me that he had read my deepest thoughts.
Can it be that from horror comes beauty? Can hope be born of despair? Even as the winds die down, the thunder ceases, the waves subside, and the wind quietens, there comes the suggestion, only the suggestion, mind you, of the sun's revival, the heralding of a clearer day and a fairer sky. We will be back shortly with Act Two.
I'm High Brown, producer of the CBS Radio Mystery Theater. As all Mystery Theater fans know, we and Walt Disney World are offering you an exciting series of weekly prize drawings. The grand prize each week takes four lucky people on an all-expense-paid vacation trip to fabulous Walt Disney World near Orlando, Florida. And right now, it gives me great pleasure to announce the name of our first week's top winner. Are you ready? It's 11-year-old Mike Honig of Fort Madison, Iowa. Congratulations. And 100 other people who entered our contest will each receive a neatly styled Mickey Mouse wristwatch. They'll be notified by mail. There's no mystery at all about how easy it is to enter this contest. Just stay tuned, and at the end of the next act of Mystery Theater, I'll give you the short and simple details. Let's hear from you. Enter as often as you wish, and good luck.
In God We Trust, America Speaks.
Thoughts from Helen Keller. I have four things to learn in life. To think clearly without hurry or confusion. To love everybody sincerely. To act in everything with the highest motives. To trust in God unhesitatingly. I long to accomplish a great and noble task, but it is my chief duty to accomplish humble tasks, as though they were great and noble. The world has moved along not only by the mighty shoves of its heroes, but also by the aggregate of the tiny pushes of each honest worker.
Presented by the Catholic Communications Foundation.
You will remember that we left our despairing hero on the shore of the Mediterranean Sea below the city of Genoa. He had poured out the story of his wasted life, his extravagance, his self-indulgence, his profligacy, into the ear of a misshapen monster who had survived a shipwreck by floating to land on a small sea chest. It is this chest which the monster has just opened for our hero's inspection. What a sight! Blazing jewels, beaming gold, pale silver. A mad desire to possess this treasure which gleamed and glittered within the chest was born of a sudden within me. Though I was trembling, yet I controlled my voice as best I could.
Doubtless one so powerful as you could do anything at all?
Nay, I am not so omnipotent as I seem. Some things I do possess. which you may covet. But I would give them all for a small share of what is yours. Huh.
As nothing is my sole inheritance, what beside nothing would you have?
Your comely face and well-made limbs.
You cannot mean what you say.
I ask for a loan, not a gift. Lend me your body for 3 days. You shall have mine to cage your soul the while, and in payment, my sea chest. What say you to the bargain? 3 short days.
It may seem to you, listener, incredible that I should lend my ear to this proposition, but in spite of his unnatural ugliness, there was something fascinating in a being whose voice could govern earth, air, and sea, and I did feel the keenest desire to comply, for with that chest I could command the world. You must realize that if you were to be faithless to our bargain, I would soon die upon these lonely sands.
I shall leave you food for survival.
But even should I survive, the limbs and body which are still mine would be yours forever.
3 days only! Look here. See the blue of these sapphires. See how the rubies glow, the diamonds flash and sparkle. And there is gold enough here for a kingdom, silver to furnish an army.
I know little of black magic, for that is surely what you deal in. But I have heard that there must be a spell, and you must know it, whereby you, should you play me false, would be obliged to render up what you so unlawfully gained. I mean, my face and form.
Is such a spell.
And what is that?
Your blood and my blood must mingle. Here's a dagger. Show me your wrist. Hold it out to me.
I have drawn blood.
Now, here is my arm. Take the dagger and cut.
I hesitated. It was possible that I contemplated driving the dagger into his heart instead of his wrist, then making off with his treasure, leaving him to die upon the shingles, his blood mixing with the sand. Or was it that the sight of that bony wrist, that hand with its elongated fingers and their black nails, seemed too repulsive to touch?
Cut!
Cut I did. I held the horrid hand and drew the dagger across the skinny wrist until the blood flowed freely.
Good. Now our wrists must lock together. Let our bloods become one.
And so we did. In horrid fascination, I watched his blood and mine mix and mingle, yet not quite did they become one. For while the blood from my wrist flowed crimson, the blood of the monster flowed black. I scarcely knew when he separated himself from me. My eyes were fixed upon the treasure chest. I let the jewels run through my fingers. I caressed the gold. I stroked the silver. But as I did so, I saw my hands. Could they really be mine? Long, black, emaciated fingers with long, black nails? Yes, they were now mine. But I comforted myself only for 3 days. I thought to retire to a cave nearby and there wait out the little time before the monster's return. I picked up the chest awkwardly. So unused was I to my new arms, I entered the cave, set down the chest full of my fortune, and ruminated on my future conduct. I felt a surge of joy, of confidence, and a glad cry escaped my lips.
Thank you, my Lord God!
Oh, horror of horrors. The voice was the voice of the monster. He possessed not only my face, my limbs, but he had taken my voice itself. Two suns had set. The third dawned, slowly paced the bright orb up the eastern sky. Long it lingered in the zenith, and still more slowly wandered down the west. It touched the horizon's verge. It was lost. The evening star shone bright. I thought to myself, he will soon be here. And for the second time, I shouted aloud for joy.
At last! At long last!
But he came not. By the living heavens, he came not. Night dragged out its weary length, and the sun rose again on the most miserable wretch that ever upbraided its light. I dreamed that I was at Juliet's feet, and she smiled and spoke my name.
Guido. Oh, Guido!
She had seen my transformation. I awoke with the agony of the nightmare upon me. I would on the instant return to Genoa. That was my resolve. I began to walk towards Genoa. I was somewhat accustomed to my distorted limbs. None were ever so ill adapted for straightforward movement. And with, well, it was with infinite difficulty that I proceeded. I tried to avoid the hamlets, for I was unwilling to make a display of my hideousness. But I was not always successful.
What is that? Sweet Savior, what is crawling up the path? It's a spider! A spider the size of a man! Maria, get in the house! Quickly! Quickly!
I had had the wild notion that I might beg at her house for food, for I had brought none with me. But I understood immediately that there would be no food here. No help of any kind.
Wait, Maria! Hand me my broom! Be quick! It's starting to run! Give me my broom!
With my spindly arms wrapped around my tiny head and my long, crooked limbs carrying me away from her as fast as they were able, I escaped the enraged woman. I stumbled up the cliffs, searching for a cave where I could hide my repulsive body. And I lay panting on the rock. Below me, the splashing sea, the quiet sand, and above, the blue sky of heaven. Bruised in body and broken in soul, I slept. I rose next morning with the sun and continued my journey. I walked as best I could, but it was dark before I approached the outskirts of Genoa. The weather was so balmy and sweet that I conjectured that the Marchesa and his daughter might have left the city for their country retreat. It was from this Villa Torella that I had attempted to abduct Juliet. I had spent many an hour reconnoitering the spot and knew each inch of ground well. It was beautifully situated and bosomed in trees. As I drew near, it became evident that my conjecture had been incorrect. The Villa Torella was lighted up. Strains of music were wafted toward me by the breeze. The country people were all flocking about. I longed to address someone, to inquire the occasion of so much festivity. But I thought I might, from some hiding place, hear others discourse and in some way gain intelligence of what was going on. So, entering the walls that were in the immediate vicinity to the mansion, I found one dark enough to veil my excessive frightfulness. There, amid the shadows, quivering with fright and dread, I heard footsteps. Two pairs of footsteps approaching along the gravel path.
A beautiful night for the gala, Father.
A happy omen of tomorrow's ceremony, Marchese.
I do believe it will be a blessed union, Father Pellegrini. Do you not?
By all the saints, my friend, I sincerely believe it.
Guido has changed, Father.
He is truly penitent, truly reformed.
I feel that.
He is the prodigal returned, Marchese.
Father Pellegrini, it brought tears to my eyes when he so humbly, yet with such dignity, asked permission to call himself my son.
And you pardoned him?
Ah, with joy and love in my heart.
and fast upon the pardon bestowed on him the gift of my lovely child, my Juliet.
You have acted nobly, Marquesa, with magnanimity.
Wisely, too, I trust, Father.
I believe so.
My heart died with horror. I had done all this. On the morrow, my once promised bride was to pledge her vows to a fiend from hell, all because of me, oh merciful God. The anguish was too great to bear. And scarce knowing what I intended, I grasped the dagger that the monster had used to sever both our wrists, and I plunged it in my breast. Where does the devil live? How does the devil speak? What does he look like? What powers does he possess, and how may he be disarmed? We know not, neither his abode, nor his voice, nor his face or form. Yet, since the inception of the race, we have believed that by some supreme effort he can and must be driven off. We shall return shortly with Act Three.
I'm High Brown, producer of Mystery Theater. This month, we in Walt Disney World are giving 16 lucky people a week of thrilling entertainment at Walt Disney World near Orlando, Florida. Send your name and address. Each week for 4 weeks, we'll select winners in random drawings. You could win an all-expense-paid vacation for four, flying to the vacation kingdom of the world. Stay at the Dutch Inn, get free tickets to rides and attractions in the Magic Kingdom, including Disney's bicentennial spectacular America on Parade. There are 400 Mickey Mouse watches as prizes also. Send your name and address to Mystery Theater, Box 1, Radio City Station, New York, 10019. Employees of CBS and Walt Disney not eligible. Contest void where prohibited. That's Mystery Theater, Box 1, Radio City Station, New York. Entries received by September 3 are eligible for at least one drawing. Winners will be notified by mail.
I like the way the forest sounds. The way the leaves rustle in the wind and fall to the ground and crunch under your feet. The way the birds sing and the chipmunks chatter. The way a squirrel scrambles up a tree. I like the way the forest smells, too. The air's fresh. And you can tell the difference between one kind of tree and another just by smelling them. But did you know we can destroy all that beauty in just one careless second? That's why I'm asking you to please be careful with fire. Because when we lose a forest, we lose a lot more than meets the eye. I ought to know. I'm Ray Charles.
A public service on behalf of the Forest Service, State Foresters, and the Ad Council.
Recall with me now, dear listener, how we left Guido, our gallant cavalier, transformed now into the shape of the most repellent monster, hiding in the shadows of the Villa Torella, where he heard the Marchesa Torella and Father Pellegrini discuss the marriage on the morrow. His long-loved Juliet was to marry the monster who now appeared to be, and everyone believed to be, Guido himself.
The anguish was too great to bear, and scarce knowing what I intended, I grasped the dagger and plunged it into my breast. I know not how long I lay there in the darkness. But I sensed somehow that the dagger had not pierced my heart. I had not ended my agony, only prolonged it. Then I heard voices. Father Pellegrini and the Marchesa Torella were returning along the gravel path. I had wounded myself badly and, too weak to move, lay directly across the path where they could not fail to see me.
Father, look here. There, on the path.
Oh, my sweet Savior. What can it be?
Is it an animal?
Certainly it is nothing human.
It's some dead thing, some beast who dragged itself from Lord knows where to die in my garden.
But what shall we do with it?
Don't touch it, Father.
But I must make sure.
It is foul and putrid. Let it lie there where it is. I'll fetch a servant to take it outside the walls and bury it.
Poor creature. Whoever or whatever you are, God have mercy on you. What? Did I see you still? Is it possible? Do you still live? There, you moved again. You need the doctor for Wretch. Hold fast to whatever life is in you, and I will return.
My wretched body had somehow, without my wishing it, responded to the kindness I heard in Father's voice. Despite my self-inflicted wound, I somehow raised myself and staggered toward the villa. Wild thought races through my brain. Could God permit the foul union slated for the morrow? I hid myself among the trees. The garden grew deserted. The gates were closed. I staggered about and came under a window. Ah, well did I know it. A soft twilight glimmered in the room. The curtains were half drawn. It was the temple of innocence and beauty. I saw Juliet enter, approach the window beneath which I lurked. Oh, she clasped her hands. She raised her eyes to heaven.
Guido, mine own Guido.
Then, as if overcome by the fullness of her own heart, she sank on her knees.
Oh, Guido, my only love. What joy the dear Lord has conferred upon me. Oh, let me live only for my life's love, my Guido, my best beloved.
I heard a step, a quick, firm step. And soon I saw a young man, richly dressed, young and graceful to look upon. Yes, by heaven, he was handsome. He had the lithe body, the fine features of... Oh, God in heaven, of myself. I crouched closer. The youth approached. He paused beneath the window. She arose, and again, looking out, she saw him.
Guido. Oh, my love.
The guests have gone.
My dearest. You must go, too. It is not seemly that we should be together like this until after tomorrow's happy meeting.
I will not go. Ah, sweetest, could I press one kiss upon thee, I could repose. And then he approached, and I thought he was about to clamber into her chamber. I had hesitated not to terrify her. But now I was no longer master of myself. I rushed forward and threw myself upon him. I cried...
Oh, loathsome and foul-shaped rat!
Guido! Heaven protect us!
A dagger was in my hand. I knew that soon the monster and I would be separated. In the midst of my frenzy, there was much calculation. I must fall upon his sword that he did not survive. I cared not for the death blow he might deal against me. I saw his villainous resolve to do this in the sudden thrust he made at me. I threw myself on his sword and at the same time plunged my dagger with a true and desperate aim in his side. We fell together, rolling over each other, and the tide of blood that flowed from the gaping wound of each spilled on the grass. And in the moonlight, I saw that my wound shed blood that was crimson, while from the gash I had made in his side flowed blood that was black. More, I saw not, for I had fainted. I returned to life, weak almost to death. I found myself stretched upon a bed. Juliet was kneeling beside it.
My Guido. Oh, thank heaven you live.
Juliet.
My love.
The voice in which I spoke was mine own. Mine. Not the horrid screech of the monster, but mine own.
My dearest one.
My sweet love, I have a strange request to make of you.
Anything, my heart.
Bring me a mirror.
A mirror?
I must have a mirror.
Oh, do not agitate yourself, my darling. I will fetch you a mirror. But you must not be shocked at what you see.
Quickly.
Here it is.
Give it to me.
You are wan and pale after last night's encounter.
How? By the mass, I think myself a right proper youth.
Your color will return.
Do not condemn me. No one knows better than I the value of his own body. No one, probably, except myself, after having had it stolen from him.
Whatever are you saying? Are you feverish?
Perhaps a little. I have endured much.
Are you strong enough to see anyone? My father and Father Pellegrini are just outside the door.
Ask them to come in.
They are so happy that you are recovering. Do come in. He is anxious to see you.
Guido, my boy.
Marchese.
You look well, Guido.
A little pale, that's all.
The doctor says that in a few weeks' time you will be up and about.
And well enough for the wedding ceremony.
Do you have any pain?
None at all. Oh, hardly any. And what small pain I may feel, all is washed away by the happiness in my heart.
The monstrous creature you killed last night.
He is dead.
We believe you mortally wounded.
You believe? You do not know?
There was nothing but a pool of blood.
What color was the blood?
What color? Why, scarlet red, like any blood. Why do you ask?
No reason. There's no reason that I can give you on the instant.
And then we heard Juliet calling for her father, and we hurried to her room.
And outside her window, we found you.
Two deep wounds in your breast, but praise God, still breathing.
I told them how this black monster had sprung out of the darkness with a dagger in his hand. How you had drawn your sword.
Wait, all of you. Where is this black monster now? Is he still beneath the window, or has he been carted away?
We never found him.
Never saw him again.
Doubtless he crawled away to die outside the gates. None of the villagers ever caught sight of him.
None.
We have inquired of all who were there.
Oh, Guido, my dearest, why trouble yourself?
I wish to know that he is dead.
But why, my darling?
One day, when I am stronger, I shall tell you, and you too, Marchese, and you, Father, all I know of the monster. And so I did. Incoherent as it may have sounded, some weeks later, I talked first to Juliet of the monster and his crimes.
But you are raving, Guido. You are still suffering from your wounds, your encounter with the beast.
You nearly married him.
Hush, my darling. Speak no more of that dreadful encounter. It has left you fevered and distressed. But do not fear, my heart. I shall tend you and nurse you back to health. And once we are wed, you will forget the black monster forever.
I did not forget so quickly. I talked next to my future father-in-law, the Marchesa Tarella, who gave more credence to my story.
It was the fiend himself, Guido, there can be no doubt. Ah, what a trickster he can be. We all know that.
Indeed he can.
I find it credible, although I confess it stretches my belief, that he could steal your body from you and come here in your guise.
He did, sire. He did.
Yet he came so humbly, so penitently. He asked my forgiveness for his sins in such a straightforward way. I confess he took me in completely.
Sire, will you believe me when I tell you that what he did is what I would have done? Once I recognized the folly of my ways, will you believe me that on that sandy shore, I cursed myself 1,000,000,000 times over for my overweening pride, for my insufferable vanity, for my stubborn egotism? Will you believe me, sire?
My son, with all my heart, I believe you.
When I told Father Pellegrini the story entire,
His idea differed from either Torella's or Juliet's, and it is his interpretation of the strange events that I most favored and favor to this very day.
I am of the opinion, Guido, that it was not the fiend, nor any demon, who made the fateful bargain with you that day. Your body in exchange for his wealth. No, I think it might rather have been a good, not an evil spirit, sent by your guardian angel to show you the folly of your pride.
I did not again visit that strip of sand where I met the monster, nor did I seek for the treasure. The work of my bodily cure and my mental reform went on together. I have never, it is true, wholly recovered my strength. My cheek is paler since, my person a little bent. My wounds still trouble me, and Juliet sometimes alludes bitterly to the malice that caused this change. But I kiss her and tell her all is for the best. I am a more faithful husband, and but for those wounds, never would I have called her mine. Which interpretation of Guido's story do you favor? Juliet's? The Marchesa Torella's? Or Father Pellegrini's? Was it all the product of a fevered brain? Or was the monster in truth a demon from the netherworld bent on destruction? Or was he sent by Guido's guardian angel, a kindly spirit in hideous disguise, to restore to the young man his sanity and good judgment? We leave it to you. I'll be back shortly.
Somebody still cares about quality. To the Budweiser people, that's a lot more than just words. It's a commitment to continue brewing Budweiser the way it's always been brewed. With care, with pride, without compromise. And it's a promise to everyone who enjoys great beer that there's one thing they'll always be able to count on. That one-of-a-kind Beechwood-aged Budweiser taste. A taste that speaks for itself, loud and clear. Hear it talking?
And when you say Bud, you say you care.
Bush, St. Louis.
We have said that each one of you may opt for whatever explanation of our story you prefer. Was the monster a vision, a devil, an angel? There is a fourth interpretation which we offer for your consideration. It is from Joseph Conrad, the great Polish writer. The belief in a supernatural source of evil is not necessary. Men alone are quite capable of every wickedness. Our cast included Kevin McCarthy, Robert Dryden, Ian Martin, and E.V. Juster. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown.
And now, a preview of our next tale.
I called the airline. Then I walked to the window and I looked down at the park. There were the people, walking their assortment of dogs, pausing to talk to one another. All very urban, very civilized, very nice. Then I saw a black figure racing along the furthest edge of the park, running wild and unattended. I wanted... Above all else, I wanted to be that solitary thing. I wanted to be a wolf, a lone wolf on the tundra so that I could open up my throat and howl. A desperate, abandoned howl filled with terror and desperation. A howl that would say, I am here. I am frightened. I am alone. And I don't know what to do.
Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, Brewers of Budweiser, and Buick Motor Division. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Music. KIXI, Seattle.
CBS News. Both the Israeli and Egyptian governments are extending a welcome to Secretary of State Kissinger and wishing him good luck in his announced resumption of shuttle diplomacy. I'm Mike Stanley reporting on the CBS Radio Network. Kissinger spoke in Vail, Colorado, Sunday after the apparently positive response of the Israeli cabinet to the latest Egyptian position on an interim peace agreement, saying he would resume his shuttle. He noted that while both sides have agreed in principle on some of the issues involving the new Israeli defense line in the Sinai Desert, there still is work to be done.
We still have to work out the protocols and the details of the various disposition of forces after another interim agreement has been made. There will be complicated issues of civilian administration, and there are one or two issues of principle that remain outstanding. However, it is the president's judgment, the judgment of the parties, and my own, that in the light of the goodwill that has been shown by both parties in recent weeks, in light of the progress that has been made, the remaining differences are surmountable.
Secretary Kissinger and his wife and President and Mrs. Ford wrapped up the weekend at the Vail, Colorado Presidential Vacation Resort with Sunday night dinner at a chic French restaurant. They were accompanied by the Ford children, Jack and Susan, and their dates. Tomorrow, Mr. Ford embarks on a hectic two-day tour of six cities in four states. He'll begin with a visit to an experimental oil shale mine in Rifle, Oklahoma, then move on to the Iowa State Fair at Des Moines in the afternoon. CBS News continues following this message.
If you ever use a hemorrhoid preparation, you should know this. Vaseline Brands has news. It's Hemorrhoid Ointment. Hemorrhoid works fast, helps protect with a proven medical ingredient for soothing occlusion. And Hemorrhoid gives you only this key ingredient, so it gives you more than the leading preparation. Now, at your first sign of pain, burning, and itching, turn to soothing Hemorrhoid. Hemorrhoid from Vaseline Brands. Use only as directed.
Hi, everybody. Phil Rizzuto here with a few words for sport fans everywhere. Nightly, Monday through Friday, I bring you Phil Rizzuto on sports over most of these stations. I wrap up the daily events with an action review that includes interviews with players, coaches, and managers, and always give you a preview of what's to come. I also have comments on all phases of the sports world that I know will interest you. Hope you'll listen right here Monday through Friday nights for Phil Rizzuto on sports on most of these CBS Radio Network stations.
The 12-alarm oil refinery fire in Philadelphia is described as contained, but continues to burn out of control despite the efforts of some 600 city and Gulf oil firemen. Actually, there were two multiple alarm fires, the first at the oil tank storage farm in the early morning, the second in the afternoon. Police arrested one man who was wounded, but there's no indication at this time as to what charges have been lodged against him. The casualty list is long, as detailed by City Managing Director Hillel Levinson.
We have three confirmed dead and three missing, a total of six. We have firemen in a hospital. Four at St. Agnes in the burn center are in serious condition. Three are in Methodist that are not critical, and two in PEGH that are not critical. There were three injured civilians, all employees assault.
Levinson also notes firemen are hosing down the Penrose Ferry Bridge close to the fire in an effort to prevent structural damage from the intense heat. That bridge, which connects South Philadelphia with the southwestern suburbs and Philadelphia's airport, was closed earlier because it was feared a huge chimney weakened by the heat might collapse and hit it. Typhoon Phyllis is roaring toward the Korean Peninsula after killing at least 15 people in a blustery sweep across Japan's islands. In addition to the dead, at least 24 other Japanese are listed as missing. The typhoon dropped up to 20 inches of rain, leaving hundreds of homes underwater, power lines down, and some 330,000 homes without electricity. Transportation disrupted on several of the Japanese islands. At last word, the storm still was packing winds close to 120 miles an hour. The Panamanian-registered freighter Sea Bear capsized and sank Monday off central Japan. All 22 crewmen were rescued. The Japanese Maritime Safety Agency says it has no report of what caused it to turn turtle. More in a moment.
Do you recognize the voice of this incisive CBS News interviewer?
The idea that man is an aggressive, instinctively violent, naked ape has achieved some currency.
CBS News correspondent Mike Wallace, whose interviewing techniques have won him a lion's share of broadcast journalism's most coveted awards. Mike's talked with everyone from Mideast monarchs like the Shah of Iran to eminent military historians like Samuel Eliot Morrison, presidential aides like John Ehrlichman to bogus biographers like Clifford Irving. The list would take you all the way around the world. Born in Brookline, Massachusetts, and an alumnus of the University of Michigan, Mike began his career with a Chicago newspaper. After serving as a naval officer in the Second World War, he got his broadcasting start at a Chicago radio station. Since then, Mike has become known for his many exclusive and penetrating interviews in politics, the arts, with literary figures, and the like. Listen for him on Mike Wallace at Large, every Monday through Friday on the CBS Radio Network.
Gasoline station operators in St. John's, Canada, have had their imaginations tested. As prices jumped past $1 a gallon, the problem was what to do with pumps that could compute sales only up to 99.9 cents per gallon. The solution? Reset the pumps to indicate the half-gallon price, then double the amount shown as the total price for each sale. Mike Stanley, CBS News.